Hi everyone, I'm Andy.
And I'm Angela.
And welcome to The Major Stream, a podcast for Majestans by Majestans. Note that the podcast The Major Stream is not to be confused with the in-game Major Stream, a wave of living energy that refreshes a Majestan's health and abilities at sunrise.
This episode, we'll talk about traveling throughout Majesta. We'll take a peek into the Monster Manifesto to learn about Winter's children, hear a performance from Triple Treble, ask Ryben about his favorite subject, learning things, and learn about the skill, Feet of Strength.
People don't understand it. Say I'm too old to believe in magic. Your only limit is what you can imagine. So come and listen, la 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 la. You're still dreaming of your last plot. After game ends, do you feel lost? Are you worried we forgot you? Introducing the Magistream. Come ask Ryben anything. Be your bridge between the games. People don't understand it. Say I'm too old to believe in magic. The only limit is what you can imagine. So come and listen, la 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 la. So come and listen, la 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 la.
Welcome to episode 2 of our podcast. Our first segment of this episode is called Roads, Realms, and Ranges, Magistry's Travel Segment. Usually in this segment, we're going to be talking about the various places around Majesta and going into detail about them. However, today we want to talk about your character's ability to travel in between events. Actually, Andy has already made a great video about how to enter and go on a travel, and he's uploaded it to our YouTube page, so you can find it there if you're looking exactly how to learn how to do this. This segment, though, we're going to start from the beginning and talk about traveling from a more out-of-game perspective. So, what exactly is a travel request, and what should you expect from it?
Well, since Majesta's time parallels real time, real life continues for folks in the world, even when we're not at game. A travel is an experience your character has between events that requires them to go someplace on Majesta. It does, of course, require money, in-game money to travel, but the amount that you'll need to pay depends on a few factors: distance, mode of travel, whether your character has any abilities that lower the cost of the travel, such as wilderness survival, or purchasing it through brownie points or other special in-game skills like hoppers or whatever. All of these factors are laid out in the rulebook and in the video that I made, so we won't go too into depth into it here. But Majesta is like a fantastical equivalent of Earth and is shaped roughly identically, with distances on Majesta correlating to distances in the real world. If you want to go somewhere that's not listed on the handy pop-up travel table in the database, you can generally figure it out using like Google Maps or some other online map program. You need to know how far it is from Trade Gate to Fago City. Check out the distance between New York City and Mexico City, and it should be the same. Remember, even though you do have to pay for the trip out there, the trip back is both instantaneous and free. That didn't used to always be the case, but it is now.
What a deal.
I know, it's a great deal. I do feel like it has made Ryben like age faster than I have, because I've been spending more in-game days somehow than there are actual days between the events. But
right.
That's also been some trips to other dimensions, too. But
so the question is, when is it worth it to travel? The main reasons to travel are potentially to get a better answer on your gather info request, mm-hmm. give a written letter a better chance of reaching its addressee, though the Messenger's Guild is fantastic.
Yeah.
Study at a library with the skill library access. Get a better price if you are using the acquire item skill to purchase an item. Or participate in some events, such as fighting in an ongoing battle, so that your character can officially be recognized as having been in that battle.
Sometimes alchemists can find specific components when they travel, and folks with acquisition skill, mostly people with stealth, may find that might have a bearing on their travel. They might get something other than money. If you travel to a marketplace in Bloomingport between games, you might get your hands on some potions or something. If you use your acquisition skill to get something different than money. If you're trying to do that, you might want to make a note of that in your travel request And it's
please do.
It's not guaranteed. The staff does a really good job when they've got the time, which isn't always, of trying to like accommodate stuff and make travels interesting. But acquisitions doesn't get you like really expensive stuff. Each level of acquisitions gets you like 5 copper, so 3 levels would get you 1.5 silver. So if you're looking for something more than 1.5 silver, don't expect that from acquisitions, even if you specifically request something other than money.
And if you're looking for, yeah, something other than money, you know, you're not going to get more than 1.5 silver's worth of goods.
Right,
so
if you had, yeah.
When you are, you know, you might read a newsletter article and you're like, oh man, I want my character to go experience what's happening in that newsletter article. Mm. And though you might only get a response that says, you did this, or like I tell my staff, cool story, bro. It might also have significant plot consequences in the future. Like, did you go out and check out the Well of Spirits that was overflowing in Quilagua? A real place, actually. Well, maybe you'll be recognized and spared when those same vengeful spirits come to kill everyone. Or, you know, maybe you'll just be their prime target.
Yeah, it could be. another thing, side effect of having travel is having an alibi. If, like, a nobleman was murdered between games if you traveled like between games to a location, you can say, no, I wasn't even here. I was in Tradegate. on the other hand, if you like heard about a murder and wanted to travel there, you could try to figure out what's going on there yourself with stalking or other things. But and if you want to be a suspect, you could, you know, travel to some place where you know that there's going to be a murder. I don't know why you'd want to do that, but you could.
Plot is plot.
Yep.
Of course, you don't have to submit a travel request to do that. You could just say, you know, that you were at an event for, you know, you were somewhere for this XY event and hope that that pans out. But if you did submit a travel, then maybe, you know, an influential NPC would be able to back you up.
Yeah, I find it always helps to have a paper trail when you can. Unless you don't want paper, the kind of person doesn't want paper trails, but.
Right, right. When a staff member asks your character to travel somewhere for a plot reason, that's when you're going to get more of a wordier response. If you ever see people at check-in that have paragraphs and paragraphs printed out on their character cards, these are usually plot-related travels that the staff has asked them to go on. I know in the old days when I was a brand new NPC and I was really excited about writing travels, I used to write huge travels, regardless of whether or not they were plot related. Since then, I've kind of toned them down, since writing in for requests is a lot of work.
Sure.
But every now and again, if I ask someone to go on a travel, my inner storyteller does come out, and they get to be kind of wordy.
Yeah, yeah. So if you're talking to an NPC and you're saying like, hey, you know, could you teach me about such and such or tell me about such and such? And they say, oh, come see me in Bloomingport or see me at my place in Tradegate. That's code for write a travel. So.
Right, right, exactly. I think that's important. That's an important piece of information. Like if his NPC says, oh, hey, I'll pick you up on Fortune Day at 9:00 p.m. at night. Well, that usually means that they're asking you to submit a travel, because we're not in game at 9:00 p.m.
Right. If they say come back up to the manor house in 3 days, that means write a travel that you're going to go to the manor house and get some more info after game.
Exactly. So what else can you expect and what can't you expect from a travel?
If it's something that you're initiating on your own, the most you can expect is to get the responses to the info requests that you submit, your stalking, your gather info, that sort of thing, your library access. Or if you're just...
A lot of times you'll see in your travel something that says, oh, congratulations, you made it to Tradegate Library.
Yeah.
Please see your gather info for more information.
Yeah. And that doesn't mean that it won't necessarily also have consequences. Like one time I wrote a letter to someone and I just got, you know, your letter was delivered. But then I got a special info request that said, someone came up to me and was like, hey, I heard, you know, you were asking about such and such a thing. And it was the same thing that I wrote the letter to someone else about. So sometimes you do get bonus stuff, but don't count on getting more than just your info requests answered.
Right. And it does help us to know which direction your character is going and what you want them to do. Even if it's just a travel, even if all you get is you did this, at least you've let the staff know that, hey, I want to go searching for my long-lost brother.
Yep. And Pels can help with that, too. Doing your post-event letters can also give the staff guidance as to what sort of character development you're hoping for with your character. If you don't have the in-game money to do the travel, but
right,
travels can help with that as well.
Travels on their own, you'll sometimes just get place descriptions or names. I know that a lot of times if they say they're going to Tradegate to go shopping for something or other, you'll get a shop name or a couple of shop names, or maybe the name of a person that owns the shop or something like that. But you generally aren't going to get questions answered or really any other information on a travel request unless you couple it with a gather information, a stocking, or an astrology.
Or unless the staff is feeling generous or they have more time, like if it's the long break between seasons, you might get a little bit more, but you can't count on that.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect it.
Yeah.
Additionally, you can't kill characters or steal money or items between games. There have been very few exceptions to this, and it's usually only if we need to push a plot point or if we know that, you know, someone's not coming back to game. But honestly, I can only think of one or two at the most times that has happened. The exception to this generally is the skill acquisitions, and that does allow you to acquire money in some fashion or another in between games.
Sometimes stolen from other particular people.
Right, exactly. And the same with profession skills. We've had people go through Majesta, singing their way through Majesta. I'm looking at you, Magento Laishi. And he has profession skills as well. So I've said in his travel, hey, you traveled through all these places, and the money that you earned from your profession is what you got from your singing.
Nice.
So you can use a travel request to specify how your acquisition skills or how your profession skills are being earned in that way. And the staff will officially acknowledge that you made money in that way, unless it doesn't match what your profession can do or if it conflicts with what the storyline allows for.
Yeah, I do a lot of scribing specifically for House Lavendros to make, to make some of my money, but...
Right. And just on the side of the staff, it takes each of our plot writers many, many hours of volunteer time to respond to all of the information and travel requests for each game. And we like to give our players as much time as we can to submit their requests, but we also need to make sure that we leave the staff enough time to answer them before the event. So if your character wishes to travel somewhere in response to a newsletter article that is released after the information request deadline, you can email us to request it, and we'll allow it if we can, but be aware that we may not be able to.
So, where would you like to go? Want to learn about some specific place on Majesta during this travel segment on a future episode? Email us at themagistream@magistry.com and let us know where you want us to visit.
Welcome to our next segment, Majestic Beasts and Where to Find Them, where we delve into Majesta's Monster Manifesto and talk about the various creatures that roam our world. Given that it's winter, we'd like to talk today about a rather obscure and mischievous group of fey creatures known as Winter's Children. This group of fey creatures tend to show their faces out after Isley, which is the fey holiday that transitions fall into winter, after that's over and at the onset of winter. They are of the Unseelie Court, which are the darker and more mysterious of the Fae Courts, as opposed to the lighter, sweeter, and generally more good-natured Seelie Court. And this could be its own segment someday, so we won't go too far into that. But the Winter's Children are mischievous, with a cold, cruel streak, but they aren't necessarily malicious. Perhaps the best description of the nature of these creatures is that they're true neutral, with, that mischievous streak. Generally, they stay within the Fae Realm, and their cavorting leeches out into Majesta, helping to create our wintertime.
Winter's Children, along with a mysterious figure known as the Jack in the Green, frolic along the edges of the Fae Realm and the Nature Realm in preparation for winter. It's said that they help to lure the trees and plants to sleep, and that they thrill in digging burrows for frogs and luring fish to the bottom of lakes and tucking in sleeping bears. However, it's also rumored that without the Jack and the Green to guide and shepherd them, winter would take a nasty turn, especially if they managed to get out of the Fey Realm and onto Majesta proper.
It's worth noting that the Jack and the Green is also a servant of the incarnation of nature, who looks after the plants and the growing things in the winter months. He is an aspect that maintains the order of nature amongst the chaos of winter's children.
Hmm. There was a nasty case of a freezing death that killed many people and plants hundreds of years ago. It was said to be the fault of a particularly rambunctious group of winter's children.
Winter's children carry an aura of chill around them, and it shows in the crystallized ice around their features, particularly their mouths and noses. Their hair is usually tinged with white or blue, and their wings, if they have any at all, look like frost on a window pane. They have an innate ability to manipulate water and ice, and they enjoy spreading their chill to others. Frostbite, red noses, and frozen toeses are often attributed to winter's children.
Toeses, yep. Particularly cold and snow-heavy winters are attributed to large gatherings of winter's children, and bonfires, drinking, and camaraderie are said to ward them off and send them away, hence the midwinter celebrations that are common this time of year. In mountains and more rural areas, winter's children are allowed more freedom and cause avalanches, heavy snowfalls, and other mischief that they can get away with. However, they're also known to be artists working with snow and ice that nature provides.
You're not going to be able to find a more prominent display of their combined winter glory than in the deep, ice-frosted forests of the Great Frostwood or the stern, blustery, snow-capped Icewind Mountains. So those are winter's children and where to find them. If you know of a monster that you would like manifestoed on our podcast, email us and let us know. We would like to take a brief moment now to thank our sponsor for today's show. Today's sponsor is The Burrow in Riverton. Come join us for a night of dancing, drinking, and debauchery with your favorite Mongrelians. Warm fires, hot entertainment, and cool drinks. The Burrow in Riverton. You won't remember the last time you had so much fun.
Ugh. I'm certain you won't remember the last time you had that much fun.
I hid that from Andy until just now.
Yeah, that was a surprise sponsor.
Oh, I'm so excited. Next, we hope you'll join us in giving a warm welcome to a new and upcoming group from Lakedale known as Triple Treble. Here's Triple Treble singing My Love Come Home in our segment Command Perform.
There once was a maiden whose love she had hidden from a man who was worthy but went off to war. And she missed him so clearly, her parents thought, dearie, we'll find you another, a man who's worth more. My love, come home, my love, come home. She sat and she cried, my love, come home. My love, come home, my love, come home. She sat and she cried, my love, come home. They brought in some suitors, but none could persuade her, for she still loved that man who went off to war. And then one day a letter from a courier met her, and said that her love he lived no more. My love, come home, my love, come home. She sat and she cried, my love, come home. My love, come home, my love, come home. She sat and she cried, my love, come home. With the news of her lover, she couldn't recover. She soon took her life under New Green's bright moon. And her voice, you can hear it, there's no rest for her spirit. She calls for her lover to come home to her soon. My love, come home, my love, come home. You can still hear her spirit. My love, come home. My love, come home. My love, come home. You can still hear her spirit. My love, come home.
That was Triple Treble, a group that I made up with my sisters to fill the void in this episode's Command Perform segment. And now they're a part of Majesta. That was my sister Monica and my sister Biz harmonizing with me on that. Thanks, guys, for helping me out with that. If you would like to perform for us in a future episode, you can just send your 2 to 5 minute performance piece in a MP3 file or similar to the Magistream at magistry.com, and we'll be sure to put you in there.
Welcome to Ask Ryben Anything. The opinions expressed here are for informational purposes only, and not for the purposes of providing legal advice. The opinions of Ryben Van Holt may not reflect the opinions of the Magistry staff, and may be factually untrue. Prior results do not guarantee a similar outcome, especially when time travel is involved. Oh, hello there. I was just sitting in front of this fireplace in my large bookshelf, enjoying a spiced wine and reading some letters. This is a letter from a member of town asking a question here. Arvelia asks, who are some of the publicly known teachers for different skills, and how do you contact them? Well, the town has a wealth of different skills and people to teach them. You could learn just about all of the basic skills without leaving town. The simplest way to find a teacher is to ask someone in town. Most people able to teach will have little problem teaching you, but be prepared to wait until the morning of waking day or gathering day. Once you're above the fifth circle abilities, finding a teacher may be a bit more difficult, especially if you're looking to learn nature or one of the more specialized disciplines. The best practice is to ask a few weeks in advance to make sure that the teacher is ready with a lesson plan and to ensure that they're prepared to teach the skill that you're looking to learn. For skills no one is in town to teach, a group you are part of can be a good resource. Fortune's Vanguard can help put you in touch with a teacher, or you can ask me, or write a letter to the Bristler or Porter Starley. Other groups that can put you in touch with teachers include the Town Watch, the Way Watchers, and the various mages circles, Kincori Majesta, Kincori Drakey, Kincori Nistra. I'll try to name 2 or 3 teachers who can teach each subject. For fighting, I'd recommend Sandow and Silver. Sandow is all about fighting, and Silver is a great teacher. A lot of people are intimidated by Silver at first, but once you get to know him, he's really very approachable. Aleph Finisterra would probably be one to ask. I'm not certain she can teach, though. For stealth, I'd say Silver again, Felix, and Jack Garen. There are others who might be able to teach, so ask around. Good magistry teachers would be Galin, Craven, and Rakesh if he's around. I can teach a bit as well. Nature teachers are Semeril and Lenarian. I don't think either can teach the 8th circle or above. Oh, Tatonga might. Mira is my psionics teacher. She's excellent. Jack, Silver, and I can teach psionics as well. As for spiritualism, Eleonora can teach it, but she'll only teach the advanced courses. The maestros, Magento and Simon, can teach the lower grades, as can several others. Craven has been my magistry teacher, but he's also an absorber primarily. For assassin, I'm just going to go ahead and name Bram. He readily admits to being an assassin anyway. There may be others who are quieter about it. Kale is the town's dampener, so he can teach that. I'm pretty sure Lenarian can teach elemental archer skills. Hopping can be taught by Rakesh, maybe Teg and Finley. As for other dimensional travel, ask in private. Raynan is the town's only spirit hunter. If he can't teach, he should know someone who can. The town doesn't have a dream weaver unless Cromac has learned it. He was going to learn it from friend of the town Tella Forgedheart, the minister of Hatchport. Tella was looking for more students last I knew. I've already mentioned the maestros when I was talking about spiritualism, but I might as well mention that they can also teach the basics of nature as well. Let's see, Rakesh taught Magnus to be a majestic smith. I don't know if Magnus can teach yet or not. The town doesn't have a necromancer currently. I suppose you could look up Siegfried with the Allegiant if you really wanted. Warlord training. Maybe Aleph? Lex isn't around, and I haven't seen Tiberius in a while. You could try contacting the Great Father with a Song of Strife. A lot of them are semi-retired warlords. Summerill is a wood warden, and he can teach. I'm not saying for certain that he would, though. Achille is a sword speaker of sorts with that bird scythe thing of hers. I don't know if she can teach, but you could ask her. I don't know any lycanthrope hunters. Alchemy I can teach some of. Semeril can teach some of that and the other stuff. I can teach you about gathering components, but Baxter would be the best person to teach you all of those things. If you want to know about learning a specific weapon, I am the wrong man to ask. Mira can teach astrology. I and many others can teach literacy. That pretty much covers everything except the professions. If you talk to people about their professions, I'm sure you can find a teacher for those easily enough, though. Well, I'm just going to go back to my drink and reading books. Have a good night, everyone. All right, and now for our skill spotlight. In this segment, we're going to be talking about the skill Feat of Strength. And go into a little bit more detail about the ins and outs of it, how you can use it, how you can stop it, and what it's good for. So the basics, Feat of Strength is a grade 2 fighting skill. It's also granted, you're also able to get Feats of Strength from higher grade skills and spells. You receive 2 from the Strength spell, which is Nature and Spiritualism 3, Magistry 4. You get 4 Feats of Strength from Aspect of the Bear, which is a Nature 7. And then 8 from the grade 10 heroism or other spells that grant the heroic effect. You can't hold more than 8 feats of strength at a time or use more than 8 on a single task or action.
So for attacks, well, the way you can use feats of strength is that each feat of strength that you use can be spent to increase the damage by 1 on a weapon-based attack. You can also spend 2 feats of strength to power up a weapon-based attack to power level 2. Or 6 feats to power up to power level 3. You can't spend more than 8 feats of strength per day for the purpose of increasing power levels, though you can use as many as you want for the purpose of increasing damage. There are several skills, spells, and items that have the ability to increase the damage an attack deals, but no matter how many of them you want to use together, no single attack can be increased by more than 8 damage.
Yeah, and in terms of the power levels, that is similar to the way a spellcaster's like empowerment pool works, of being able to spend some of them to increase the power level of power level 1 or 1 to 2, and power level of a 1 or 2 ability up to power level 3. That sort of thing is useful, especially for newer players, to be able to like hit things at power level 3. Or block. You can't use the Feat of Strength for the blocking, unfortunately, but it does give fighters a way to use their abilities at a higher power level if lower power level stuff is not doing anything.
Right.
For these uses of Feat of Strength, the empowering the damage or the power level, you need to roleplay powering your attack up, swinging it like around once your weapon without hitting anything for each Feat of Strength that you're using. And it doesn't have to be used on the first attack that you make after you power up, but it does have to be used within a minute of your powering up, your wind-up, or the feats of strength are lost.
Generally, this comes with a feat of strength!
Yeah, feat of strength. Of strength. Yeah, feat of strength. Yep. Yep. Generally, when you're using feat of strength, you have to, like, say... You just have to say feat of strength when you're using it for this purpose. For the other purposes, you usually have to say feat of strength, I pick you up, or feat of strength, I do this, I throw you, so it's clear what's going on.
Though we don't condone the use of throwing people with feat of strength because that gets dangerous.
Yeah.
Another use of feat of strength is carrying a person. Now, generally, when you're carrying somebody, you should be moving at a slower rate. I don't know if you've ever actually picked somebody up and tried to carry them, but it does make you move a lot slower. And that we try to role play in game when you're picking somebody up, you shouldn't be running with them unless you use a feat of strength. And one use of feat of strength will allow you to carry a person at your normal movement rate for up to 10 minutes.
Yep. Another thing feats of strength can do is force open locks. You can use that to force open a lock, but you'll need to spend several feats of strength, and it depends on the lock's quality. So 2 feats of strength per level of the lock's quality. 2 for a simple lock, 4 for a common lock, 8 feats of strength for a complex lock, and 16 for a great lock. And for that, obviously, you need more than one person, since you can't do more than 8 feats of strength at a time, unless you're Normron. Who can do 12, I think. But when you use feat of strength to get through a lock, you're not considered to be breaking the lock. You're only forcing your way through it. But any breakable objects inside the container will be broken if a feat of strength is used. So any flasks, any potions are going to be lost and destroyed if you use feat of strength to break open the lock.
Unless they're magical, of course. In which case, there will always be an out-of-game card with the flask or with the item that says that it's magical, so then it wouldn't necessarily be broken. But if you're going to break open a chest, expect that you're going to break the stuff inside
it,
too.
So the very first mod that I went in with Normaron, with Sean, like, there was a treasure chest at the end, and, like, it was on a table, and... like, I saw something else on the table. I couldn't quite see what it was. It was a spot card. And I'm like, anyone got a light? And he's like, no. Like, there's... And Normaron, like, you know, got ready to, like, break open the chest. And then he broke it open. And then after that, like, I was able to... I had enough light to see the spot card. And it said that there was, like, it looked like there was something underneath the tablecloth. Lift up the tablecloth, and there was the key. But... fortunately, nothing... There was nothing in the chest that got destroyed when he forced it open. But whatever tricks you got.
It's true. It's true. Another use of feat of strength would be to break bonds that are binding you. So 2 feats of strength are required to break someone out of a power one snare, but not bind, a power one snare effect or rope bonds. 4 feats are needed for a power level 2 snare effect or metal bonds. Unless the metal bonds have a lock card on them, in which case the lock quality reveals the number of feats needed. And then 8 feats are needed for a power level 3 snare.
Yep. Another thing you can do with feats of strength is resist wind effects, gust of wind and whirlwind.
Well, that's one of my favorite.
Yeah. So it allows you to stand your ground for those. You can't move towards the source of the wind, the caster of the spell. But you can, which I didn't know, move away from it and then replant your feet and to remain in that position.
Right. Otherwise, you have to be, you know, 30 feet away from the caster.
Otherwise you have to go 30 feet away, which is annoying.
It's true. So another use of feat of strength is that you can use it to negate skills. You can use it to negate a disarm or a withhold that is dealt to your weapon or shield, which is nice.
Yeah. I mean, you can use a withhold... to negate a withhold if you're a fighter.
Oh, right. That's true.
And that's lower level. But disarm is a higher level.
But if you've burnt Disarm's through all your 3. Lower level stuff and you really want to hold on to that weapon.
Sure. Ways that you can stop feats of strength or... It's tough. You can't, like, directly stop a feat of strength. One thing you can do is the weakness spell, which will bring in... the weakness spell will bring an end to the strength-requiring task that that they're using the feat of strength for. So if they're carrying a body and you make them weak, they can't carry that body anymore, unless they move really slow. The feat of strength can't negate a weakness if you already are suffering from weakness, but if you're suffering from weakness, you can use feat of strength to make one regular attack. Or if you're suffering from weakness, you can use skills to make attacks. So you could use a feat of strength to make to power up an attack to make a crit too, but you can't just make normal weapon swings while you're suffering from weakness.
Right. You can also use a feat of strength to perform one specific task that weakness would otherwise make impossible, such as walking or running at normal speed. And this task can be performed for 10 minutes, which is likely longer than the weakness effect is going to be anyway.
Yeah, I think that lasts like 5, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Another thing is if someone is using feats of strength to power up their attacks... anything that prevents them from actually making that attack for 1 minute, like disarming them or pacifying them or paralyzing them, will waste those feats of strength. Also, if someone is interrupted while pumping up their feat of strength, they can stop and then continue pumping up later, as long as it hasn't been a full minute in between.
Yeah. Another important thing to note is that like the empowered attacks from feats of strength that are powered up in by just the damage can be dodged, parried, or blocked by armor just as easily, as long as it's not the power level that's increased. So a crit 9 body 1, while sounding really scary, is just as easy to avoid as a normal weapon swing.
Right.
So another fun thing that we like to do as PCs during our downtime is to come up with new skill names by changing one letter of an existing skill name. So magic cage could become magic cake. What are some other examples? Eleonora's school specialty is pile resurrection. Feat of strength has a lot of good puns you can make on that.
There's, of course, the feat of strength, which talks about how strong your feet are.
F-E-E-T, yep. Meat of strength.
That sounds like something like a jerky that Wilhelm would make.
Yeah, yeah. That would be good, actually.
Meat of strength.
Yeah.
There's fear of strength.
Yep. Seed of strength.
This is after you've been doing a lot of squats.
Yeah, sure.
Or resisting feet of strength to move you. No, seed of strength.
No.
There's, of course, teat of strength, which also comes from working out.
Sure. There's a beat of strength, the maestro special add-on.
And I'm sure there's a bunch that we haven't thought of. If you have other uses of feat of strength, that different skills that can come up with by changing one letter,
sure,
feel free to comment or to email them to us, and maybe we'll talk about them in our next episode.
Yeah.
So that is feat of strength. If there is a skill that you would like us to go over in our skill spotlight, please email us at themagistream@magistry.com, and we will not only skill spotlight, but we will credit you for that particular skill in our show notes.
So that's it for our show. Thanks to Arvili for submitting a question for Ask Ryben.
And thank you, too, to my sisters, Monica Bouchard and Biz Derling, for their performances during our Command Perform segment.
Thanks to Sam Rochford for writing our theme music. You can find more of her music at facebook.com/samrochfordmusic. This podcast has been a production of Magistry, copyright P-Double Games. You can find out more about our LARP at magistry.com or on our Facebook page at facebook.com/magistry. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions, you can email them to us at themagistream@magistry.com.
Next time on The Magistream, we're going to be interviewing one of Magistry's creative artisans. We'll delve into the Shadow Realm. We're going to hear Ryben answer more questions, and we'll learn a bit of lore from Magistry's past. Thanks for listening, guys.
Bye.
Introducing the Magistream. Come ask Ryben anything. Be your bridge between the games. People don't understand it. Say I'm too old to believe in magic. The only limit is what you can imagine. So come and listen, la 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 la. So come and listen, la 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 la.